She said, don't I know you from the cinematographer's party? I said, who am I to blow against the wind? I know what I know. Money. She was the kind of girl who could say things that weren't that funny. I said, what does that mean? I really remind you of money. She said, oh, who am I to blow against the wind? I know, I know.
And what was the name of this ill-fated ship? And where did she go on her ill-fated trip? Lamin Oil from Africa never thinks twice. The name of the ship, Condoleezza Rice. And the name...
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Negotiations for a new three-year contract continue between the Writers Guild of America and the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. In 1984, when the video cassette market was in its infancy, talent guilds agreed to exclude 80% of revenues when calculating their share of profits. Now DVD sales, more than $22 billion in 2003, are projected to exceed VHS, and studios are claiming any pay increases will bankrupt the industry. Also in dispute is the amount companies pay for healthcare coverage and reality TV, the bulk of which is produced by non-union labor.
Democrats in Congress today unveil a counterproposal to George W. Bush's plan to create an immigrant guest worker program. Whereas the White House seeks to provide temporary resident status, the Democratic plan would offer permanent citizenship to any currently undocumented worker who's been in the U.S. for 5 years or more and has worked full-time for at least 2 of those years. In exchange, the Democrats would reduce the number of guest workers allowed into the country. Neither bill, however, is likely to clear Capitol Hill before the November election.
On May Day, 300 trade unionists in Thailand stormed the government house, calling for an increase to the minimum wage, better protection for workers trying to unionize, and the removal of Thai troops from Iraq.
The Canadian province of British Columbia nearly experienced a general strike in the public sector yesterday as 100,000 workers in various government agencies prepared to stop work in support of BC hospital staff. 43,000 healthcare workers walked off the job last week when contract talks with the provincial health authority broke down. Key to the dispute were government demands for a retroactive wage reduction and more latitude for the outsourcing of hospital support staff. The BC legislature passed an emergency back-to-work law last Thursday, but the strike continued until Sunday. That prompted the larger walkout threat, which was only averted when the province backed down on the retroactive pay cut and agreed to limits on future outsourcing. Even so, hospital support staff will take a 15% wage decrease over the term of the new deal, and many are wearing black this week to mourn the mixed outcome.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study in the Journal of Urban Economics found that city dwellers living close to a National Football League franchise pay higher rent and property taxes for that privilege. On average, a resident in an NFL city pays $184 a year, or 8% more than those without a football team. And researchers found total property taxes were about $50 million a year higher.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
What is one of the most dangerous things you can do when you get seriously ill? Go to the hospital. Talk about catch-22. You're sick and you're told by your doctor to go to the hospital, but no one tells you the deadly little secret of today's hospitals. They kill. They kill because they have inadequate infection control practices. Patients going in for a particular problem often acquire infections from the hospital itself, often causing death. Lots of deaths. The Center for Disease Control reports that nearly 90,000 Americans a year die from these hospital infections. That's more than die from auto accidents and homicides combined. About 2 million patients a year catch infections from their hospitals, one of every 20 people who go in. What could be done? A huge step forward would be the simplest one, hand washing. Infections could be cut by more than half if there was an effective program for all medical personnel to wash their hands regularly, especially washing with alcohol hand rubs. Yet hospitals, apparently watching their bottom lines, don't have such a system in place, and none are required to put it in place. On the other hand, some hospitals do an excellent job of preventing infections. How are you to know the good from the bad? You can't. Believe it or not, there's no requirement that hospitals report or publicly disclose their infection rates so we patients can decide which is the best place for us. Luckily, some states are pushing mandatory disclosure laws. Unluckily, hospital lobbyists are pushing a bill in Congress that would preempt the ability of states to require this disclosure, instead setting up a voluntary federal program for reporting infection rates, and even these voluntary reports would be kept from the public. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is stupid. Consumers Union is fighting for full disclosure. Join them at StopHospitalInfections.org.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Toyota owners, roll into summer with great tire service offers at your participating Toyota dealer. And keep rolling all year long with free gas from Toyota. That's right, Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer, where you get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter the sweepstakes.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void or prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 year old with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way from coast to coast. Tom Hartman here with you live. Murphy's Law. Yesterday I said, isn't it great? It's sunny. Summer has come to the People's Republic of Vermont and many parts of the United States. And this morning I woke up and it was snowing. It's Tuesday the 4th of May. This is not a repeat. And yeah, it was snowing this morning. Well, I think it's up to like 40 or something now, so apparently it'll get a little better. We talked yesterday about Major General Yassim Mohammed Saleh, the Iraqi general who showed up in his limousine and his armored Mercedes and said, you know, I'll lead those guys into Fallujah. And the soldiers let him do it, and at the same time, interestingly, that the Pentagon apparently had no clue about this. Another one of this administration's great Three Stooges routines. Well, Andy Borowitz has a new report on this from BorowitzReport.com. The headline, Iraqi General Gets Queer Eye Makeover. Saddam Loyalist to Look Less Like Saddam. Had you seen this guy on TV? He looks just like Saddam. He's got the mustache, the sneer, the whole... Anyhow, the U.S. military command in Iraq has ordered former Iraqi General Major Yassim Mohammed Saleh to undergo what it called a queer eye makeover to make the former Saddam Hussein loyalist look less like Saddam Hussein, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff confirmed today. In an interview with CNN's Wolf Blitzer, General Richard Meyer said the U.S. had been ready to transfer authority over the city of Fallujah to General Saleh, quote, until someone at headquarters pointed out that he looked creepily like Saddam, end quote. In explaining the Joint Chiefs' misgivings about General Saleh, General Myers said, quote, we felt that giving military authority to a gentleman who could basically take Saddam's date to the prom without her suspecting anything was, under the circumstances, ill-advised, end quote. After an intense round of discussions at the Pentagon, the U.S. decided to order a so-called queer eye makeover for the former evildoer, dropping style guru Carson Kressley into Fallujah by parachute. In a conversation with reporters today, Mr. Kressley said he had urged General Saleh to shave his Hussein-like mustache and ditch his Republican Guard uniform in favor of a tailored suit by the German designer Jill Sander. He said, I took one look at that Republican Guard uniform and said, WMD, wrong men's designer. Mr. Kressley said that although General Saleh was resistant at first to his queer eye makeover, by the end of the process, the fascist and the fashionista had totally bonded. Mr. Kressley said, I had no idea what a bath party is, but I like the sound of it. From BorowitzReport.com. Today, in this on this day in history, one of the more significant events, in fact, it was memorialized in music. Remember this? Four dead in Ohio. Four dead in Ohio, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. The soldiers are gunning us down. At least 28 guardsmen fired at least 61 shots in 13 seconds. According to court documents after the fact, none of the students was closer than 100 yards to the guard members. The journalists, people around the world, people around the nation were absolutely shocked to discover that the guard members were carrying live ammunition. This was not something that was expected or realized. A couple of folks who were on the scene on that day, here's Paul Topol, a photographer who took some of the pictures that immortalized the event. Oop, I'm sorry, wrong clip. We'll get to that one in a minute. Here is Kent Topol.
When I saw the students and their pools of blood, I said, it's got to stop. The protests, the war, everything, this has gone too far.
And here's Bob Carpenter. He was the news director of Kent State Television.
There isn't a day in my life that doesn't go by that I don't wake up or have some conscious thought of this. I was in Vietnam twice before. I didn't have the fear that I had on this campus. Helicopters swooping down, tear gas, bullets. You know, it was a scary thing. So I get goosebumps even talking about it right to this moment.
So, you know, remembering 1970, 34 years ago. And hopefully we won't revisit those lessons. I mean, you know, those times. I think the lesson of this is quite clear, and that is that when the government, when our government, when any government, I mean, you see this all around the world, when any government engages in war, in sending its young men and women off to fight and die, without a justification that is easily understood, well understood, and agreed to by the population at large, then you have a problem. We have a very significant problem. And this, you know, to bring this to the moment, I find this very interesting. BBC News had an interesting analysis today by Paul Reynolds. He says, events in Iraq have been spinning out of control and out of control of the spinners so fast that on many fronts the W word is now being mentioned. What's the W word? Withdrawal. Charles Heyman, senior defense analyst for Jane's Consultancy Group, wrote in the London Times on Monday, it begins to look as though there is going to be a rather messy political solution to the whole affair, possibly brokered by the United Nations. Expect to see an agreement where both sides can claim some sort of victory, followed by a rather hasty withdrawal of coalition troops at some stage in the next 6 months. England, the United Kingdom, has about 6,500 troops on the ground. We're pushing 140,000, 150,000 here now, moving in that direction. Then they go on to point out how bizarre the situation has become. Republican Guard General Jassim Saleh, we just talked about, appeared on the scene in his chauffeur-driven Mercedes in his own old uniform. What's happened to Muqtada Sadr? The guy that we were told was going to be brought to justice on a murder charge. He's still preaching. The BBC points out the propaganda war could not have gone worse with the publication of the photos of the prisoner abuse. Damage has been done on the street. I am of the opinion that, the Iraqis, first of all, I think the Iraqis and much of the world, they were willing to go along with the idea that Saddam was a nasty guy who had weapons of mass destruction and that he was threatening the United States. I mean, who knows, right? They didn't. The average person in Iraq didn't know. Okay, you got to take him out. He's a bad guy. We agree. And then we can't find any weapons of mass destruction. So then the rationale becomes, well, we're going to ignore the tyrant in Burma. We're going to ignore the tyrant in China. We're going to ignore the tyrant in Zimbabwe. We're going to ignore the fact that there's not a single elected democracy in the Middle East outside of Israel. We're going to ignore all of that. We're going to ignore the kingdoms and dictators of Saudi Arabia, Egypt. We're going to ignore the fact that in Pakistan, North Korea, that we're going to ignore the fact that in Pakistan, Sharif is, he was head of the army. He overthrew an elected president and declared himself head guy. We're going to ignore all that, all the dictator. But this one dictator, he's really bad. We got to take him out because he's abusing his people. He's got torture rooms in this prison, and he's got mass graves. And now the people of Fallujah are returning and they're discovering a mass grave in their soccer field. Between 350 and 600 bodies buried in the mass grave of the soccer field, killed by American troops. And I am not blaming our troops for this. You know, the average soldier, these are not decisions that enlisted people make. They were put in a terrible situation. The failure to have any kind of plan on the part of the Bush administration for after for the day after Saddam fell lies squarely with George W. Bush. Ultimately, if you believe Harry Truman that the buck stops here, clearly George doesn't. Or more broadly with Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, Powell, Feith. Very straightforward. But I think that the publication of these photos, I mean, we came in and we said, okay, we're here to bring democracy. We're here to liberate you from somebody who tortures your people. Oh, by the way, we torture your people. It just doesn't work anymore. I am absolutely convinced that this administration and the American people have dramatically underestimated the incredible damage that the publication of those photos, and before that, just the buzz on the street has done. It turns out now we find out that the United States Army knew this was going on in January. Back in November, it was first reported to the military police by an American soldier. Back in November. Hey, this is going on in the prison. They launched an investigation, discovered problems in January, launched a larger investigation. A U.S. general went in February, put together a report, said this is going on there. And then Tommy Franks, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, has the stupidity. I mean, I don't have a better word for it. Stupidity to go on national television this Sunday and say, well, I can't comment because I haven't read the report. It was on your desk in February. Anyhow, we have lost our moral authority there. And then you've got the political problem. We're saying, hey, we're going to hand it over to a local government. Don't worry. Who's the local government? We don't know. And so everybody's trying to climb on top of everybody else. Hey, how about me? And then we say, but by the way, this was just, you know, a week and a half ago, the local government we're going to turn it over to won't have any power. They won't be able to change the Constitution. They won't be able to change the laws. They won't be able to unprivatize the 147 major industries in Iraq, which have already been sold to American corporations. They won't be able to take control of the oil, which we voided the contracts that Iraq had with Germany and Russia and France and a dozen other countries and made them all into contracts with American oil companies, donors to the Bush campaign. They won't have any say over that, and they won't have any say over the military. And it's just, it has become too much. The American-sponsored newspaper, the editor and the entire staff of the American-sponsored newspaper in Baghdad yesterday resigned en masse. They said, that's it. We have just absolutely shot ourselves in the foot here by the absolute total failure of any kind of planning on the part of the Bush administration. And the reckoning is not going to be pleasant. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information, available in bookstores everywhere.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. New research conducted by the Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University confirms what many workers already know. They're getting the short end of the stick. Since the end of 2001, American workers have had the lowest share of the national income on record, meaning they're producing more and getting less. Corporate profits got a larger percent share of the wealth from increased production. 41% went to corporations, with labor receiving only 38%.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Tell me you love facts real straight. Don't make me over. Rapper and glory.
Tom Hartman back with you. 25 minutes past the hour. On April 13th, George Bush was asked if he had made any mistakes. He couldn't come up with any. Center for American Progress has come up with a list of 100 of them. Here's just a few from the Iraq section. Number one, failing to build a real international coalition prior to the Iraq invasion, forcing the U.S. to shoulder the full cost and consequence of the war. Number two, approving the demobilization of the Iraqi army in May of 2003, bypassing the Joint Chiefs of Staff and reversing an earlier position. The president left hundreds of thousands of armed Iraqis disgruntled and unemployed, contributing significantly to the massive security problems Americans have faced during the occupation. Number three, not equipping troops in Iraq with adequate body armor or armored Humvees. And no contrary to the ads you've been seeing on TV, John Kerry never, ever voted against body armor for our troops. Didn't happen. He voted against the $87 billion because he wanted changes in the bill. He was, you know, and he knew it was going to pass. And body armor was not even listed in that bill, but that's the one they put. Republican deception. I guess you come to expect that. Number four, ignoring the advice of General Eric Shinseki regarding the need for more troops in Iraq, now Bush is belatedly adding troops, having allowed the security situation to deteriorate in exactly the way Shinseki said it would if there were not enough troops. Surprise, surprise! It's, yeah, no, it's not a surprise. Sorry, George. You know, Rumsfeld the other day saying, well, things have not gone as well as we expected. Well, they've gone exactly the way General Eric Shinseki predicted. But you fired him for making that prediction. Ignoring plans, fifth mistake by George W. Bush, ignoring plans drawn up by the Army War College and other war planning agencies, which predicted that the worst security and infrastructure problems America faced would be in the days of the Iraqi occupation, and specifically predicted what they would be and what we should do about them, and none of that was handled. Number six, making a case for war, which ignored intelligence that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Sure enough, I know the cons love to go on TV and the radio and say, well, who could have known? Everybody believed there were weapons of mass destruction there. France believed there were. England believed there were. Germany believed there were. Russia believed. Even the UN believed there were. Wrong. None of those countries, with the single exception of the United Kingdom, believed that there were. And even at the United Kingdom, Tony Blair had to sex up a dossier to make it seem like there were. Putin, Vladimir Putin, the former head of the KGB, I mean, you know, an intelligence service in Russia. This is a spy who knows how to look at intelligence. Came out and said, before we went into Iraq, let's let the inspectors do their job and find out if there are weapons of mass destruction, because the United States has not presented compelling evidence that there are. We don't yet believe it. We'd like to see some proof, thank you very much. The Germans said the same thing. The French said the same thing. The Poles said the same thing. And on and on and on the list went. The UN's position was not, yes, there's weapons. Nobody thought there were weapons there, except for us, except for George. And apparently even he didn't think there were weapons. Apparently this decision was made to attack Iraq back when the energy policy was meeting. The energy policy committee. Dick Cheney's energy policy task force was when the initial plans to invade Iraq were drawn up. They were drawn up by Ken Lay, by the biggest oil companies in the world. And ironically, we're finding this out because of a lawsuit by one of the most right-wing organizations, Judicial Watch, the group that whose lawsuit brought down Clinton with the whole Monica Lewinsky thing. It's just absolutely incredible. Number 9, predicting Iraq would pay for its own reconstruction. Number 10, wildly underestimating the cost of war. Number 11, trusting Ahmed Chalabi, who had dismissed faulty intelligence. You know, the former bank robber. On it goes. We page after page. I'll stop at that point. I think you get the point. It's time for a new administration. It's time for a new vision of America and America's role in the world. It's Tom Hartman, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Negotiations for a new 3-year contract continue between the Writers Guild of America and the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. In 1984, when the video cassette market was in its infancy, talent guilds agreed to exclude 80% of revenues when calculating their share of profits. Now DVD sales, more than $22 billion in 2003, are projected to exceed VHS, and studios are claiming any pay increases will bankrupt the industry. Also in dispute is the amount companies pay for healthcare coverage and reality TV, the bulk of which is produced by non-union labor.
Democrats in Congress today unveil a counterproposal to George W. Bush's plan to create an immigrant guest worker program. Whereas the White House seeks to provide temporary resident status, the Democratic plan would offer permanent citizenship to any currently undocumented worker who's been in the U.S. for 5 years or more and has worked full-time for at least 2 of those years. In exchange, the Democrats would reduce the number of guest workers allowed into the country. Neither bill, however, is likely to clear Capitol Hill before the November election.
On May Day, 300 trade unionists in Thailand stormed the government house, calling for an increase to the minimum wage, better protection for workers trying to unionize, and the removal of Thai troops from Iraq.
The Canadian province of British Columbia nearly experienced a general strike in the public sector yesterday as 100,000 workers in various government agencies prepared to stop work in support of BC hospital staff. 43,000 healthcare workers walked off the job last week when contract talks with the provincial health authority broke down. Key to the dispute were government demands for a retroactive wage reduction and more latitude for the outsourcing of hospital support staff. The BC legislature passed an emergency back-to-work law last Thursday, but the strike continued until Sunday. That prompted the larger walkout threat, which was only averted when the province backed down on the retroactive pay cut and agreed to limits on future outsourcing. Even so, hospital support staff will take a 15% wage decrease over the term of the new deal, and many are wearing black this week to mourn the mixed outcome.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study in the Journal of Urban Economics found that city dwellers living close to a National Football League franchise pay higher rent and property taxes for that privilege. On average, a resident in an NFL city pays $184 a year, or 8% more than those without a football team. And researchers found total property taxes were about $50 million a year higher.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tight to your dreams, my friends. Dreaming of an America that's egalitarian, that's democratic, where the government does what the people would like done. Where people can get ahead, where people can start their own businesses without fear of being squashed by a huge multinational corporation. Where competition is once again real. Where opportunity is real for everybody. Wouldn't that be nice? But, you know, the cons, you know, if it's good for the billionaires, it's good for us. No, sorry. Tom Hartman Program, 26 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to call. And while I've been ranting and raving here, we've gotten a few calls backed up on the line. Let's go to Alan in Virginia, one of our serious satellite listeners. Hey, Alan, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, how about your book, We the People?
Yeah.
And I like it so much, I want to buy a case of them and give them to people.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you.
It covers history, the future, and current events. And I never really realized it, but it sounds like Abraham Lincoln was really against the railroads.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. There's a whole bunch of different conspiracy theories around, you know, why John Wilkes Booth shot him. And there were actually six co-conspirators with Booth who were arrested and executed. Most people don't remember that. He wasn't a lone nut. There really was a conspiracy. But the nature of that conspiracy is still being debated, and some people think that the railroads were behind it, actually. I mean, there's a small group of conspiracy theorists who are into that. Nobody knows for sure to this day. It's amazing. But the railroads were the biggest corporations of the day. Well, thanks, Alan. That's very kind of you. If you go to TomHartman.com and on our homepage, you know, just on the basic homepage, there's a graphic of, you know, the little cartoon of me holding the book about halfway down the page. And you click on that, it takes you to a page for the book that the publisher put up. And they can tell you how you can buy cases of it. Or you can get them from your local stores. Usually they'll give you a discount if you buy a bunch of them. But thanks. It's very kind of you.
Thank you.
I appreciate the call. 1-866-889-8894. Let's talk to Doug in Santa Fe. Hey, Doug, welcome to the program. Whoop. Got to push the button there. I thought I had. Hey, Doug, I pushed the light instead of the button.
Okay.
Glad to have you on. What's up?
Two questions for you. One is the right-wing talk machine has been relating that recently in Iraq they found biological chemicals and the stuff to make viral weapons under a kitchen sink in a scientist's house. Do you know of any story like that, or if it's valid?
I know nothing about that, number one. Number two, I'd say anything that's under a kitchen sink is not going to be enough to threaten the United States, which was the whole premise of the war. And number three, you know, this may be part of a disinformation campaign because, you know, simple things like chlorine, like bleach, mm-hmm. you know, chlorine right. can be made into the, well, in fact, mustard gas, which killed so many troops during World War I, is made out of chlorine. So there's no shortage of household chemicals that could be under somebody's sink that you could say, oh, this could be used to make weapons of mass destruction. For that matter, I mean, you want to get technical about it. Somebody who's got running water has one of the chemicals, you know, bihydrous oxide, H2O, one of the ingredients to make weapons of mass destruction. So, you know, the right-wing spin machine is just absolutely mind-boggling, Doug. It's absolutely mind-boggling. In fact, I got a couple of cool examples here for you. That was your question, right?
I have actually one other. I was talking to somebody about the percentages that the working poor pay against taxes compared to the top 1%, and my numbers didn't quite come out correct, so I was wondering if you could lead me towards a website that would be pretty concise on what the percentages are, who pays what.
I had that. I'll have to listen to the show, and I'll track that down during the next break.
Every day, like clockwork, I listen to the show.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot, Doug. I'll get that information back out again. Okay.
All right.
Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. The final point that I wanted to make about Iraq, and this is just such a key one, is that the whole reason why Rumsfeld and these guys, it appears, thought that they, if they simply knocked over Saddam, if they simply knocked over the army, that they would be welcomed as liberators, was because essentially that's what happened in both Germany and Japan. And they were looking back at those situations and saying, well, you know, we came in with overwhelming force, we wiped out a bad guy, and the people loved us. And what they failed to understand was the whole concept of a thought virus, of a belief that had been shattered. The people of Germany, by and large, certainly the majority of the people in Germany, up until maybe the last year or so of the war, but even many of them right up to the bitter end, believed that Hitler really was trying to create a better world, 1,000 years of peace, create the master race. I mean, it was a very weird, bizarre, dysfunctional belief. It was essentially a cult, the whole Nazi thing. But they believed it. And when they saw those pictures of the people being liberated from the concentration camps, when they saw the consequences of what Hitler had done, I'm speaking from, you know, some firsthand knowledge here. I lived in Germany for a year, and I know a number of people who are now in their 80s and 90s who remember that time. They were horrified. They were so shocked and so horrified that they just said, that's it. This guy was nuts. How could we have ever followed him? Similarly, in Japan, you had people in Japan, the kamikaze corps, the pilots who flew their planes into the decks of our aircraft carriers caused incredible damage to our fleets during World War II. The kamikaze corps was entirely volunteers. None of those guys were drafted. There was a belief in Japan that the emperor was divine. He was the 192nd or whatever it was incarnation of the sun god. You know, this strange mix of Shintoism and variations on Buddhism that the worship and ancestor worship that led people to really and truly believe, many Japanese, that the emperor was the incarnation of divinity, and therefore he couldn't be wrong. And therefore, if he said you had to do something, you had to do it. And it was a society based on obligation. Gimu and Giri. And on. The three different types of obligation that exist in Japanese society. On is the kind of obligation that happens if somebody gives you a gift. Now you have an obligation to give them back one. Gimu is the kind of obligation that happens in a family where you have an obligation to your family because they brought you into this world, and it's a debt that has to be repaid. And Giri is the sword of Giri. Actually, I wrote a novel called The Sword of Giri. It was a whole long story about that. But anyhow, Giri is the type of obligation that you have to your country and to your emperor, and it can never be repaid, even with your life. And when the Japanese, again, when at the end of World War II, when the Japanese saw particularly what had been done in China in their names, the rape of Nanking, the what they had done in Korea, when they saw this, they were horrified. And the emperor himself had to stand up and say, I was wrong. And it shattered their belief structure. Well, in Iraq, there was no belief structure like that. Or, let's rephrase that. There was a belief structure. The belief structure was, we are part of the Muslim Arab people. And keep in mind, Muslims and Arabs are two separate things. The Arabs is a kind of a tribal, or not, you can't quite call it racial, but it's a particular. For example, Iranians don't consider themselves Arabs; they consider themselves Persians. But they're both Muslim, right? So You've got and Muslim is the religion. So you've got Asians in the Philippines who are Muslim. They're not Arabs. So anyhow, the people of certainly the Sunni and the Shia of Iraq had this identity, this belief that they were Muslim, that they were Arabs and that they were Muslims, and that was their identity. And Saddam Hussein was a bad guy. Some of them bought into it, but everybody knew that you just did that. You went along because if you didn't, his crazy sons would get you or he would get you. And, there wasn't this consensus. There wasn't this widespread love of Saddam. There wasn't this belief in a larger philosophy that caused them to be willing to die for it. But there was a sense of nationalism and identity. And when we went in and took out Saddam, we didn't alter that. We couldn't alter that. It had been there for thousands of years. It had allowed them, they had used that sense of identity to successfully throw out the British in the 1920s, to throw off the Ottoman Empire before that, to throw off the invaders, you know, the side shows of the Crusades before that. I mean, you go back 2,000 years, they had been repelling invaders. Go back 6,000 years. It's in the Epic of Gilgamesh. Their identity was, we're the guys who live here and we repel invaders. And we thought that we could go in and invade and say, and they'd say, oh, hey, welcome. And you know, here, you know, if I can figure this out, then you would think that some of the rocket scientists in the Bush administration could figure it out. If Howard Dean could figure this out, if 10 million people around the world who went out and marched in the streets in the largest demonstrations in the history of the world against the United States attacking Iraq could figure this out, if the president of France could figure it out, if the prime minister of Germany could figure it out, if the president of Russia could figure it out, if the president of Poland could figure it out, if Vaclav Havel of Czechoslovakia could figure it out, and all these guys not only figured it out, they were talking about it in the press. Why couldn't George Bush figure it out? I will leave you with that question. We'll go back to the phones here. 1-866-889-8894. Tony in Washington, D.C. is on the line. Hey, Tony, happy Tuesday. At least it's not snowing there, right?
No. We just got plenty of sunshine problem. Yeah.
The sun has just come out here, actually. It's just in the last 10 minutes.
Great. Question I have to ask, do you think, because there's been allegations all along about the October surprise that the Vice President Cheney is trying to get any information from the prisoners? That's why they're being abused. And they say there are more, according to Seymour Hersh, that's been videotaped.
Yeah. Yeah, this is what we've seen is just the tip of the iceberg. According to the report that the Army itself did in February, what we have seen is just the tip of the iceberg. I think the big problem, frankly, in my mind, is that they have outsourced so much of this stuff. You've got two separate private for-profit corporations affiliated with the Bush administration who have been in large part responsible for interrogating these prisoners. And now, you know, the New York Times reporting today, or the Wall Street Journal, rather, I read it this morning, that it looks like they can't be prosecuted because they're not in a country that has a law, right? There's no government in Iraq, and they're not employed. They're not part of the military, so they're not subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the UCMJ, and therefore it looks like and the two corporations have said we haven't recalled anybody. I mean, one of them has this guy who raped a kid in the prison. It was documented back in February to the U.S. Army. He's still on the job there in that prison. But these are private corporations who are substantial donors to the Bush administration.
Jeez, it looks like Karl Rove did his homework.
I think not, frankly. I think that this is a huge screw-up, and it's a huge screw-up as a consequence of the conservative religion of privatization, this absolutely religious belief. And I say it's a religious belief because, you know, Paul said, you know, belief is faith in things unseen, or faith is belief in things unseen. And this is, you know, the conservatives believe this, even though all the evidence contradicts it. Not to say that, you know, evidence contradicts religions. As you know, I don't think that, but this is like a false religion. You know, it's a religion of anything that a government can do, a private corporation can do better. And it turns out that if government had been doing this, that there would be accountability, there would be chain of command, there would be proper training. Instead, you've got these private corporations that are connected to the Bush administration, big donors to the Republican Party. They're in there supervising the interrogations of these guys. And guess what? This is what happens. I mean,
can I ask you another question about the Congress? You think that Kerry will talk anything about the rubber stamp Congress that's just shut up and just do what Karl Rove and company tells them to do? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Tony. I think John Kerry, if he becomes president, will do a lot. I'm very hopeful. If it is true what the conservatives say, that John Kerry has the most liberal voting record in the Senate, even more liberal than Ted Kennedy, then that's just exactly what we need right now, in my opinion. Because this country has gone so far to the right The extremist policies that have dismantled our environmental protections, that are making our air dirtier, are making our water dirtier, you know, mercury, arsenic, you know, right on down the list, handing off our federal lands to mining corporation. Basically, this huge revolving door where you've got the guy who was the head of the hospital, the for-profit hospital association that helped make Bill Frist a multimillionaire, coming in and leaving his $750,000 a year job to head up Medicare, to write the Medicare bill, and then going back to work, you know, for 5 and 6, 7 figure salaries in the private sector immediately thereafter. Thomas Scully. I mean, you see these situations, the conservative philosophy, the conservative takeover of this country has been so destructive to America. And then you look at our foreign policy that is causing the entire world to think poorly of us. I'm sorry, you can't do it alone. We have had presidents ever since George Washington who understood this. You can't do it alone. We live in a world with other people. And they're not all going to just roll over because we say, hey, jump. They're not going to say, how high. Joe in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Joe, we've only got about a half a minute here. I can hold you on, or is it something quick?
I think I can make it quick.
Okay.
First of all, they're talking about the soldiers that did the torturing as not understanding and not being taught about the Geneva Convention.
Right.
Isn't it common sense not to treat people like that?
Well, number one, it's common sense, and number two, any army that sends soldiers into war has to tell them about what the Geneva Convention terms are, because they may be arrested and held under the terms of the Geneva Convention.
Thank you. And the other thing is that wretched woman with the picture with the cigarette pointing, you know,
yeah.
The woman from West Virginia.
Yeah.
She's not only given trailer park trash a new low.
Well, let's not pick. Joe, we're out of time. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Thanks.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. Its clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of CarboBlocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely, because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value, free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
A UN report lists a growing number of marine environments that are running low on oxygen. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In many places around the world, coastal ecosystems are in trouble because pollution is robbing the water of oxygen. A recent report from the United Nations provides a list of almost 150 coastal environments that now suffer severe oxygen depletion. Robert Diaz is a marine biologist at the Virginia Institute of Marine Science. He wrote a study that was the basis for the UN report. He says the scientific name for the problem is hypoxia, and it received publicity for the first time back in the 1970s. That's when scientists started to document oxygen depletion in the Gulf of Mexico every spring. Diaz says once people started to look for hypoxia, they found it all over the place.
So it's really in the 80s when we see the identification of a lot of zones that had been hypoxic. But what we see in the 90s is the identification of new zones, zones that were not hypoxic in the 80s. So unfortunately, I think there is a real trend as an increase in the number of systems that are experiencing hypoxia for the first time.
Hypoxia gets started when water is polluted with excess nutrients, such as fertilizer. The UN says hypoxia could get worse in Asia and South America as farming becomes more dependent on fertilizer. Diaz agrees that it could be a serious problem.
It's in these other countries that up until this point haven't really been large users of fertilizers that we're going to see the biggest changes. And unfortunately, there'll be the worst kind of changes for the marine environment.
The report on hypoxia was part of a yearbook published this spring by the UN Environment Program. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Like the pine trees lining the winding road, I've got a name, I've got a name.
And welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. You know, Joe made a point that I think probably a lot of Americans are thinking. You know, they look at those soldiers who were involved in humiliating those prisoners, and I think most Americans don't even realize what this means to people in Iraq, because they have a society that is based on shame rather than guilt, much like the Japanese. We have a society where if you are the blackest emotion is guilt. That, you know, you can use guilt to manipulate people. Guilt. We condemn people by saying that they are guilty. In Arab society, by and large, in Iraqi society for sure, but by and large in Arab society and also in many Asian societies, guilt is not a big deal. People can survive being guilty. If you accuse them of guilt, oh, yeah, okay, I did that, but shame will cause people to commit suicide. And I just most Americans just really don't understand that. And what was done to these prisoners was to shame them, which is why you had yesterday in the New York Times, there was a story of a guy who had been hung upside down during Saddam's reign and tortured and beaten, broke his arm, broke his thumb, broke one of the bones of his foot, all this kind of stuff. He had been tortured by Saddam. And then he got out. And now he looks at what's going on and he says, I would rather have Saddam torture me than be paraded naked in front of a woman. He said, I would kill myself. And he was not exaggerating. So anyhow, the response of a lot of Americans is to look at what these soldiers did, particularly those who understand the horrific psychological consequences of it. And say, these people are, as Joe said, trailer trash, whatever. I'm not willing to condemn them. I'm sorry. We know from studies that have been done, good university studies that have been done, that if you have a strong enough authority figure telling somebody to do something, there was one study that was done at Yale University Medical School back in the 60s, where they had students increase what they thought were electric shocks to people up to the point where it might kill them, and they continue to do it because the authority figures told them to. I'm just not willing to condemn the guys, the men and women on the ground. This is a leadership problem, a management problem, and the person ultimately responsible for this is George W. Bush, and he's not standing up and saying that he's taking responsibility, he's not demanding accountability, and he's not saying that he's going to make heads roll. And that's why the Arab world is looking at us going, there's something wrong with America. Yeah, there is. It's George.
Listen to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
And that's it.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Negotiations for a new three-year contract continue between the Writers Guild of America and the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. In 1984, when the video cassette market was in its infancy, talent guilds agreed to exclude 80% of revenues when calculating their share of profits. Now DVD sales, more than $22 billion in 2003, are projected to exceed VHS, and studios are claiming any pay increases will bankrupt the industry. Also in dispute is the amount companies pay for healthcare coverage and reality TV, the bulk of which is produced by non-union labor.
Democrats in Congress today unveil a counterproposal to George W. Bush's plan to create an immigrant guest worker program. Whereas the White House seeks to provide temporary resident status, the Democratic plan would offer permanent citizenship to any currently undocumented worker who's been in the U.S. for 5 years or more and has worked full-time for at least two of those years. In exchange, the Democrats would reduce the number of guest workers allowed into the country. Neither bill, however, is likely to clear Capitol Hill before the November election.
On May Day, 300 trade unionists in Thailand stormed the government house, calling for an increase to the minimum wage, better protection for workers trying to unionize, and the removal of Thai troops from Iraq.
The Canadian province of British Columbia nearly experienced a general strike in the public sector yesterday as 100,000 workers in various government agencies prepared to stop work in support of BC hospital staff. 43,000 healthcare workers walked off the job last week when contract talks with the provincial health authority broke down. Key to the dispute were government demands for a retroactive wage reduction and more latitude for the outsourcing of hospital support staff. The BC legislature passed an emergency back-to-work law last Thursday, but the strike continued until Sunday. That prompted the larger walkout threat, which was only averted when the province backed down on the retroactive pay cut and agreed to limits on future outsourcing. Even so, hospital support staff will take a 15% wage decrease over the term of the new deal, and many are wearing black this week to mourn the mixed outcome.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study in the Journal of Urban Economics found that city dwellers living close to a National Football League franchise pay higher rent and property taxes for that privilege. On average, a resident in an NFL city pays $184 a year, or 8% more than those without a football team. And researchers found total property taxes were about $50 million a year higher.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
See George. See George in our national parks. George knows parks are popular. George likes to go to parks and have the media take his picture there. See George run for president. In his 2000 presidential run, George W. dressed up in khakis and held a photo op in a national park where he decried the $5 billion backlog in making essential repairs to America's deteriorating park system. It's shameful, he said, promising to fix our parks. He didn't. 4 years later, the maintenance need is $6 billion. Speaking of deterioration, Bush's National Park Service announced this February that it would allow BNP Petroleum Corporation to drill for natural gas on Padre Island National Seashore. This will put pipelines, heavy equipment, and large trucks on the longest undeveloped beach in America. Just what you want to see when you go to the solace of the seashore, a drilling rig in your face. It will hurt tourism, the ecosystem, wildlife, and local businesses. Also, one oil corporation can plunder a minor gas deposit that amounts to only one day's worth of fuel for America. Then there's Georgia's effort to, quote, improve Eisenhower Public Park in Nassau County, New York. Though it's a mere county park, the White House directed county officials to make an essential addition to Eisenhower Park prior to Bush's visit there in March. He was going for a fundraiser in a restaurant in the park. Then he was going to walk to a building to meet with some families of 9/11 victims, then proceed to a groundbreaking ceremony for a 9/11 memorial to be built in the park. The new addition demanded by Bush's minions? Sidewalks along every step of Bush's trek. Newsday columnist Jimmy Breslin reports that the word came down from on high. The president's feet are not to touch the dirt. This is Jim Hightower saying, thus, concrete and asphalt were poured so George's feet would not touch the ground, as they rarely have any time in his life.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
This report is sponsored by Pfizer and Viagra, sildenafil citrate. You've seen the signs as they leave the doctor's office. The spring in the step, the look of relief, spontaneous whistling. The technical term for this condition is, what took so long-itis? In layman's terms, it's what happens when you finally ask your doctor about Viagra. To experience the skipping, whistling, and sense of relief, ask your doctor about Viagra and if a free sample is right for you. To learn more, go to Viagra.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina. Beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Archives at whiterosesociety.org. You can find all the links to that and to our chat room, which is full of folks having an interesting conversation about something I'll just let you go check out rather than tell you. Anyhow, you can find it all by going to tomhartman.com and get the links on for that. The New York Times reports, more than 2 months after a classified Army report found that two contract workers were implicated in the abuse of Iraqis at a prison outside Baghdad. You get this 2 months ago. The Pentagon knew about it. Anyhow, more than 2 months after the classified Army report, the companies that employ them say they have heard nothing from the Pentagon and that they have not removed any employees from Iraq. The classified Army report stated, quote, At least one employee of CACI was among those either directly or indirectly responsible for the abuses at Abu Ghraib, or Ghraib, the Iraqi prison. Military spokesman in Washington and Baghdad said Monday evening they had no information on whether the workers were still on the job or why the report had not been conveyed to the companies. Well, I'll tell you, as I mentioned the last hour, there is this religion that the cons are holding, this religion of privatization. Anything government can do, we can do better, even though the corporations have to, in fact, skim money off the top to pay their stockholders, skim money off the top to pay their CEOs' huge salaries, pay for the corporate jets, pay for the gold, bathroom fixtures, pay for the corporate headquarters, pay for the advertising and marketing, and on and on and on and on and on. And yet somehow they can magically do things more efficiently than government that only has to pay civil servants. Does it make sense to you? No. Does it make sense at all? No. But, you'll find cons out there spinning this thing every day, and it's become an article of faith in this administration. I'm really pleased this hour to have on Michael Schurer. He's the Mother Jones Washington correspondent, a position that includes covering national politics for Mother Jones, one of my favorite magazines, by the way. I love it when it comes. Both print and online editions. Before assuming this position in February of 2003, he was an assistant editor at the Columbia Journalism Review. No slouch publication, that. An editorial fellow at Mother Jones Magazine, an education reporter for the Daily Hampshire Gazette in Northampton, Mass. In addition to writing for Mother Jones, Michael Schurer has been published in the Columbia Journalism Review, The Nation, City Limits, Salon.com, Capital I, and Hampshire Life Magazine. Michael, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks a lot for having me, Tom.
Hey, Mike, what's the deal with these private contractors in the prison in Iraq?
Well, they've been accused of ordering military personnel to participate in some of these horrible acts that we've been hearing about. And then they've also been accused of lying about doing that. There was this Army investigation that was leaked to the New Yorker, and now the New York Times has a copy, says that these, and it names two specific contractors for a company called CACI International as being involved in this. What it raises is one of the really interesting issues that no one has really figured out yet is where do contractors fit into the chain of command, the military chain of command in Iraq? The soldiers who are involved in this will probably be court-martialed. They can be disciplined. They're employed by the military. There's a court system set up to keep them in line. For contractors like this, there's no clear place for them to go. It's not clear they broke any U.S. laws because they're operating in Iraq. Iraqi legal system isn't really set up. It's not clear they broke any military rules because they weren't working for the military, even though they were supervising.
Yeah, it's not just where are they in the chain of command. It's where are they in the chain of accountability.
Right, and how do you keep control of them, and what happens if they go awry? There was a report the GAO released last year, and to very little fanfare, that said that a number of the weapon systems that the U.S. has deployed in the Middle East and were used in the Iraq War need contractors to operate them. I mean, it's private companies that actually do the work of they don't actually push the firing button, but they maintain the weapons. And generals in the region had no idea what job was being done by military personnel, what job was being done by contractors, and if contractors walk off the job for whatever reason, say it gets too dangerous, insurance rates go too high, whatever happens, it could really hamper the military. And General Accounting Office was saying the military doesn't even know how to deal with this problem. They don't even know they have this problem.
Well, and we had a caller to this program. And by the way, if anybody wants to call and talk with Michael, our number is 1-866-889-8894. We had a caller to this program back, 6-8 months ago, whose son was in Iraq, and said that Halliburton had stopped delivering the mail to his battalion or whatever it was, where his group was encamped, because it was too dangerous, and that every day they had to assign somebody to drive what they call the highway of death out to the airport to collect the mail from Halliburton, because Halliburton wouldn't deliver it to them. Because it wasn't, in their contract or whatever, their insurance didn't cover them, and they'd actually lost a couple of guys going to get the mail, and this was just a clear consequence of privatization of the mail to a private corporation.
Yeah, and there have been complaints about food delivery and food service that have gone along the same lines. I mean, it becomes extremely complicated when you don't have control over the people you need to supply your troops. And we're in a situation right now where the military has shifted so much in the last decade that we need these private companies just to conduct a war to maintain the troops that are over there.
Now, on top of this, and this is something that didn't just magically happen with the Bush administration. I mean, the Clinton administration was complicit in this, and it really goes back to the Reagan era, does it not? the beginning?
Yeah,
of
it does. And actually, the story I wrote in this current issue of Mother Jones looks at that history and how we've shifted so much of not only the work government does to private contractors, but the oversight of that work and the decision-making over what work needs to be done. It's a situation now where it's not just that the U.S. government is saying it's better to have private contractors do the work of government. They're saying, let's have private contractors decide what the work of government is. And so, for instance, the National Missile Defense Program that we have, there is there's a group of two companies, Lockheed and Boeing, with all the other subcontractors who work on missile defense, who are in charge of setting the parameters, doing the evaluation, setting the test requirements, and then evaluating the results of all the missile defense programs. So the companies not only are doing the work of building this missile defense system, but they're actually in charge of overseeing and deciding whether they're doing a good job at doing the missile defense
system. We'll sell it to you. We'll tell you if we did a good job. We'll tell you if it works. And then we'll bill you for all of that. That's right.
And a similar thing happened in Iraq. I'm sure a lot of your viewers have heard about the oil, the overcharging for oil that Halliburton's been accused of. That's a situation in which the U.S. government has its own agency that buys oil for the military. It's called the Defense Energy Support Center. But the Pentagon didn't give the contract to import oil into Iraq to that Pentagon agency. They gave it to Halliburton. And when you ask them, why did you give it to Halliburton, they say, well, because Halliburton drew up the plans for it. So the reason Halliburton got that contract, and that's a contract in which oil was being imported for something like $2.40 a gallon, about twice what the U.S. government was paying. Why were taxpayers paying so much more? It was because Halliburton actually designed the contract they effectively awarded to themselves. So it's another situation in which the contracting role has gotten so deep into the way government does business, it's almost impossible to differentiate contractors from the government employees.
You point out that from 1999 to 2002, this in the article in the current issue of Mother Jones magazine, we're talking with Michael Schur, and his article is called Contracts with America. From 1999 to 2002, the government eliminated 48,000 civil service jobs while adding an estimated 730,000 contract positions?
That's right. And it's the official policy of the federal government right now, the official policy of the Bush administration, to try and push jobs out the door. And a lot of those jobs,
government jobs.
Right.
They push government jobs out the door and bring in private sector jobs. I mean, George is talking about, you know, eliminating over 700,000 civil service jobs and replacing them with private contractors who are not members of the federal employees union, right?
That's right. And a lot of the jobs that have been eliminated over the last decade, and this, again, was started during the Clinton administration, Al Gore's Reinventing Government program, have been people who manage contracts and people who audit contracts and people who oversee contracts. About half the auditors and contract managers in the Defense Department are gone compared to the end of the Cold War, even though the Pentagon budget is still climbing. I mean, it went down for a while, but we're basically back up to the levels we were at the end of the Cold War right now. And as a result, the kind of contracts that are being given out are far less competitive, and the companies are much more able to milk taxpayers for more money than they should be getting for these sort of contracts. I did a data crunch of the contract database that the federal government keeps, and in 1996, 41% of federal contract spending went through uncompetitive processes. These are contracts with only one bidder or just weren't competed or through other contracting vehicles that aren't competitive. Between 1996 and 2002, it went from 41% to 52%. So right now, a majority of the federal contracts that are given out are not going through fully competitive processes. And this is something a lot of people don't know, because we have an administration that talks about business-like government, making more competition, bringing competition to bear in government, which is sort of the whole ideology behind privatizing government. In fact, the privatized government is in some cases less competitive than the federal government.
This is crony capitalism. I mean, this is I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine, and these corporations are legally free to give money to campaigns and political parties that are helping them out as well. I mean, this is just nuts. You point out in 2000, for instance, I'm reading from your article here, Congress asked the Energy Department to establish a system for paying compensation to workers who became ill from their employment at U.S. nuclear weapons labs. Energy officials used a loophole to contract out the projects without any bidding to Science and Engineering Associates, SEA, a database management firm in New Orleans, which has no experience in health claims processing. By late last year, the company had processed claims for only 81 of the 20,000 applicants. Meanwhile, a tandem program being run directly by the Labor Department employees had processed 94% of its nearly 36,000 cases. How can anybody in government look at this and say there's something, you know, there's nothing wrong with this?
There's even more absurd examples. After 9/11, the Navy decided it needed floating rubber harbor barriers for its ports around the world to prevent against terrorist attacks. Instead of actually going to find companies that knew how to build rubber harbor barriers, it went to an IT firm called Northern NEF, just because through a loophole they didn't have to compete it, asked an IT company, a company that does computer technology, to find a firm for them to build rubber harbor barriers, gave them a $2.6 million fee for just subcontracting the work to companies they knew in a technology they knew nothing about, and ended up overpaying for the harbor barrier. So this sort of stuff happens all the time.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the contract managers in the Pentagon, and no one wants to do the work themselves. So you just find some company who, through some legal loophole, you can assign this, so it's not illegal. And there's plenty of loopholes out there now. And you try and get someone who doesn't know how to do a job to find a way to do the job for them, and everybody makes money. And if no one makes noise about it, the taxpayers never know.
Michael, we've got about 20, 30 seconds left. What can we do about this?
Well, I think there's been a real increased interest in how contracts work, you know, who's contracting what because of the Iraq war. And I think there's increased congressional interest. And I think if people make it more of an issue, something they actually care about, you know, and start questioning the official rhetoric that we have a more competitive business like government, reforms will come. I mean, during World War II, there were a whole bunch of price gouging hearings and reforms that came because people were war profiteering. I think, depending on whether Democrats take back either House of Congress, that might happen again. So
yeah.
I think making noise is the way to do it.
So we have to get politically active. We have to make noise. We need to contact our elected officials and say, enough! Enough of this war profiteering. Michael Schur, Mother Jones Washington correspondent. Michael, author of Contracts with America. Thank you very much for being with us today, Michael.
Have a great time, Tom.
Thanks, you too. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
You know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the organic wine company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
The issue, middle-class tax cuts. John Kerry voted to eliminate the marriage penalty and for a child tax credit. Kerry's economic plan? Roll back tax cuts for the wealthiest 1%, helping pay for a middle-class tax cut. Don't reward corporations that export jobs overseas. George Bush, he supported tax breaks for exporting jobs, and he raided Social Security to pay for a tax cut for millionaires. Bush's priorities won't strengthen America.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
Credit card delinquency hit an all-time high at the end of 2003, according to the American Bankers Association. Nearly 4.5% of all U.S. credit card bills are a month or more past due. The ABA blames the situation squarely on the jobless recovery. Many Americans use their credit cards as stopgaps during times when money is tight. Couple that with the scarce job market and a rising rate of long-term unemployment, and conditions are ripe for rising delinquency.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Yes, indeed. Together, you and me, we can change America. We can bring back democracy. We can return this country to the values of fairness. Egalitarian, a sense of community. Rather than the, I got mine, good luck for you, mentality that seems to pervade so much when conservatives take over. We can return America back to a nation where we have a strong middle class, where we have a sense of community, where our schools work, where our infrastructure is functional, where we're not running we're not becoming the world's greatest debtor nation with the International Monetary Fund warning us that we're behaving like a banana republic, where we're not lurching back and forth between cycles of boom and bust. It is possible. It has happened in the United States. All we need to do is repeal Taft-Hartley and throw out these conservative bums with these bizarre ideas. I've got a couple of conservative alert here for you today that are just going to curl your hair. They're just absolutely incredible. We'll get to those in just a minute. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks, Tom. The horrendous treatment of Iraqi prisoners at the hands of Americans. Look, this is a story just about as old as time.
Sure.
Hating your enemy in wartime is normal and I think probably necessary, but when you begin to dehumanize your enemy, and that disdain is system-wide, you know, from ignorant, untrained, brutish guard soldiers to American generals, you know, who publicly proclaim, well, our God's better than their God. These kind of abuses just become endemic, and it's perceived by the Iraqis as a poorly planned, chaotic Christian holy war. Bush, after all, called it a crusade.
Yeah, and it, in fact, may be. I mean, you know, when General Boykin said, our God is, he says, I know my God is bigger than his God,
yeah,
and that this was a crusade and a holy war, he was never reprimanded.
Yeah.
He's still out there. He's still doing it. And I think the reason why is because there's roughly 49 million Americans who identify themselves as evangelical Christians. And what was discovered, PBS did a great piece on this on Frontline. You can actually watch it on the Internet on PBS.org now. It was on the air last week. what they discovered during the election cycle when George Herbert Walker Bush was running for president was that if they could simply mobilize the evangelicals, and Herbert Walker Bush was not an evangelical himself. He considered himself a Christian, but he didn't consider himself a born-again Christian. In fact, he made a joke once. He gave a speech to a group of born-again Christians. He says, I think I'm the only person in this room who was only born once. Anyhow, what he discovered with the help of his son, who was working on his campaign and who is a born-again Christian, and I believe it is a genuine belief on George W.'s part, what he discovered was that if you can get those evangelical Christians to vote for you, then you don't need anybody else.
Yeah. They didn't. Well, the problem with born-again Christians is they're no more sane the second time around.
Well, you know, I'm not willing with one single brush to write anybody off, frankly. There are sects within that community that are more toxic, and there are sects that are less toxic. But the bottom line is that it's a huge voting block. And one that Bush is going to suck up to all the way, and the reason that he's not putting down Boykin is because of that. And within that group, there's also a bunch of people who believe that if the Middle East breaks into an absolute Armageddon-style war, Jesus will return, and they're actually hoping for that.
You know, really
some
quickly,
of these folks.
Something I noticed because I live in a battleground state. And
very quickly, Chris.
Real quick. There is absolutely nothing in the Bush ads that are not attacking Kerry.
There you go. He's got nothing to say. He's got a record to run from, not a record to run on. Chris, thanks. I appreciate the call. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Negotiations for a new 3-year contract continue between the Writers Guild of America and the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. In 1984, when the video cassette market was in its infancy, talent guilds agreed to exclude 80% of revenues when calculating their share of profits. Now DVD sales, more than $22 billion in 2003, are projected to exceed VHS, and studios are claiming any pay increases will bankrupt the industry. Also in dispute is the amount companies pay for healthcare coverage and reality TV, the bulk of which is produced by non-union labor.
Democrats in Congress today unveil a counterproposal to George W. Bush's plan to create an immigrant guest worker program. Whereas the White House seeks to provide temporary resident status, the Democratic plan would offer permanent citizenship to any currently undocumented worker who's been in the U.S. for 5 years or more and has worked full-time for at least 2 of those years. In exchange, the Democrats would reduce the number of guest workers allowed into the country. Neither bill, however, is likely to clear Capitol Hill before the November election.
On May Day, 300 trade unionists in Thailand stormed the government house, calling for an increase to the minimum wage, better protection for workers trying to unionize, and the removal of Thai troops from Iraq.
The Canadian province of British Columbia nearly experienced a general strike in the public sector yesterday as 100,000 workers in various government agencies prepared to stop work in support of BC hospital staff. 43,000 healthcare workers walked off the job last week when contract talks with the provincial health authority broke down. Key to the dispute were government demands for a retroactive wage reduction and more latitude for the outsourcing of hospital support staff. The BC legislature passed an emergency back-to-work law last Thursday, but the strike continued until Sunday. That prompted the larger walkout threat, which was only averted when the province backed down on the retroactive pay cut and agreed to limits on future outsourcing. Even so, hospital support staff will take a 15% wage decrease over the term of the new deal, and many are wearing black this week to mourn the mixed outcome.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study in the Journal of Urban Economics found that city dwellers living close to a National Football League franchise pay higher rent and property taxes for that privilege. On average, a resident in an NFL city pays $184 a year, or 8% more than those without a football team. And researchers found total property taxes were about $50 million a year higher.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
At least you make your mind up before November. Yeah, democracy in America may not last. I really am an optimist. I really am. Even if John Kerry doesn't win the election in 2004, I will remain an optimist because I this country has been through these cycles before. We have seen horrible times. We have done stupid things. And we've recovered from them You know, I just believe we still can. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. Jarmla from Eureka, California is on the line. Hi, am I pronouncing your name right?
Yes, you do.
Great.
Good morning, Tom. I love your show.
Well, thank you.
I have a question about those private contractors or private interrogators or whatever they are.
Yes.
Since military doesn't have any right to investigate their crimes, how come military feels it is its responsibility to capture perpetrators of that crime in Fallujah where four contractors were ambushed and killed?
Well, that's a good question. Well, the answer, of course, is that whether or not there's a legal basis, it's all about testosterone. You know, it's all about, they hurt our guys, we're going to go kick their butts. It's all about Rumsfeld and Bush looking like they're tough. If it was about due process, if it was about something legal, it would have been handled very differently. I mean, we've got some between 600 and 700 dead people in Fallujah now, as part of the punishment for those four contractors who were taken out. And I'm not in any way defending the people who killed them or tore their bodies apart. And in fact, many of the clerics in the region were very upset about it because you just don't desecrate bodies in Islam. It's that in and of itself is a sin. But I think that you raise an interesting rhetorical question, but the real answer for why we're responding so ferociously is because it was bad press, made Bush look like he was weak, and Bush cannot afford to look like he's weak because much of his base is the NASCAR dads, not to stereotype too badly, but men who drink beer and watch worldwide wrestling and think being tough is a more important virtue than being legal, following the law, frankly. And I know that that's a terrible stereotype, but there's some reality to it.
It reminds me so much in Czechoslovakia when communists took over and it didn't take any time. And they started applying tactics of Gestapo.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they had good lessons. Stalin had taught them well. Are you from Czechoslovakia?
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. And do you see, I'm curious, I don't know how old you are. Did you live through that transition or had that already happened when you were young?
I was born 10 years after communists took over.
Okay.
And so, I live in U.S. 21 years. I'm citizen, yeah. And I'm horrified because I see so many connections.
Well, that's what I was wondering about is what, I wrote a piece, which is on my website. If you click on the Articles on Democracy piece and go to it, it's called When Democracy Failed. I read parts of it on the air here a week or two ago, and we've had probably more calls about that show than any other. And, about the parallels between the rise of Adolf Hitler in 1933 and George Bush. Not to call Bush Hitler. I'm not doing that. But to talk about what happens when fascism rises. Not so much, you know, nasty individuals. And I'm wondering, what are the parallels that you see?
The Patriot Act is really frightening.
Mm-hmm. So you're seeing the invasion of our homes, the loss of liberties, the sneak mm-hmm. and peek provisions, for example, that make it legal now for police to enter your house without a warrant, mm-hmm. things like that. Yeah, these are very troubling to many of us. And many of our legislators, and now we have nearly 200 communities across America that have passed resolutions against the Patriot Act. So, you know, I think that, like I said, there's some good news there, but it is scary stuff. Geronimo, thank you very much for calling.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Not very nice to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Yes, we are facing difficult times in the United States. And you know, I just got to share some of these stories with you here. Bud Hendinger, whose radio talk show airs between Rush Limbaugh and Laura Schlesinger in Orlando, Florida, debuted yesterday as the test run for the anchor for MSNBC Live. He says, if they like what I do, they'll hire me. This guy's a right-wing talk show host, right? And the network MSNBC, owned jointly by General Electric and Microsoft, had fired, as you'll recall, Phil Donahue, even though he had the highest ratings of any program on the network. They fired him because he was, quote, too liberal. Well, I shouldn't say quote, I don't know. But anyhow, here's Hettinger. He goes on the air. He calls Hillary Clinton Hanoi Hillary. In fact, he had on his website, he says, the Budman urges you to protest. Hillary blasts Bush in Arab press interview. Turns out he's wrong. Joe Scarborough had said the same thing, another right-wing crank on MSNBC. Told the same lie on Scarborough Country. Hillary Clinton was never interviewed by an Arab paper. Never happened. So anyhow, Henninger says he's not too worried about questions about his objectivity. The thing that he's most well known for, according to the Orlando Sentinel, is that he demonstrates his passion for George W. Bush through songs like God Bless Our President, which he sings on the air during his radio show every day. Here is Bud Hendinger, the guy who might be the MSNBC's next anchor.
God bless our president, whose courage we love. The world defied him, we stood beside him, as he sent our brave soldiers off to war.
Okay. He does have a great voice. He can sing a lot better than I can. Bud, congratulations on a good singing voice. Good luck with MSNBC. And I think America is figuring out that the idea that there's a liberal media out there is a crock, an absolute crock. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma is on the line. Glenn, you were also in our chat room where you were in there a little while ago when they were talking about wearing leather and having whips in there. There was a strange discussion there for a few minutes.
Well, the chat room said to say hi to you. But
well, thank you.
I tend to keep my comments to political things as much as possible.
I've noticed. But there's always that element in
small temptation. Well, because, you know, I want regular folks out there to be able to enjoy the chat room, and that's why I figure they'll call in.
And they do. And I should say, you know, the vast majority of the conversation in the chat room is not about sex. It's about the politics and the topics that we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was watching the extensive coverage on, you know, the outrage, you know, expressed about these photos, which, of course, are not about, you know, peeling back fingernails and things, but to an Arab, that kind of exposure is very extreme, and
yes.
It's a terrible thing, and I was thinking, well, what can we do? Because I don't think there's any way to fix this. It can't be fixed. It's irrevocably broken.
Yeah, well, it depends on who the we you're talking about is. If you mean what can
US.
We, you and I do, what we can do is we can vote in rational leadership and vote out these cons. You know, liberate the House and Senate from con Republican control and liberate the White House in November. But if it's what can we, the United States, do? we are screwed.
I put that in the review of your book, We the People. It's up on Amazon now. So.
Great, thank you.
And I just sort of said, your vote is our only power. You know, use it.
Yeah. Well, it's not our only power. You still have the two big things that people forget about so easily, and one is the right to speak out, to call into radio talk shows, to write letters to the editor of newspapers, to show up at community meetings, to get out there and get active, you know, show up at demonstrations, whatever it may be, to speak out. That right. And that right is what brought about women's suffrage, what brought about the civil rights movement, what brought about the end of slavery, what brought about prohibition and then the end of prohibition. I mean, what has always been at the direct election of the Senate in 1917, what has always been at the lead of social change is people speaking out. That's number one. Right. And the second thing that we have is the power to speak to our elected officials and say, I'm going to hold you accountable.
Well, that's true, but, you know, the end result is getting them to vote or getting us to vote.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I was thinking, you know, basically, I think it's a lost cause. What we need to do is really make amends, compensate the victims.
You mean Iraq is a lost cause?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need to make amends for what happened, compensate the victims, show us, you know, be a little humble, which is kind of hard for a megalomaniac to do, but we need to be humble about it and say mistakes were made and stop doing what Rumsfeld just did in his Pentagon briefing, which was questioning that, you know, torture is still in question, you know.
Yeah.
It's still alleged. And, you know, and then ask and say, look, you know, we're going to leave. How would you like us to leave? What do you want us to do to leave? Because we really feel there's something wrong here, and it's, you know, it's time to turn it over to you guys and we're going to get out. What do you want us to do? And that's about the best we can do.
Yeah, it would be, you know, Billy in Santa Fe had suggested a couple of weeks ago that we should just hold an election about whether or not the United States should stay. And if they say no, don't stay, then we should go. I am increasingly convinced. To a level of certainty now. That we are in an absolute no-win situation, and the longer we stay there, the more and more this is going to look like Vietnam.
How's it going to get better? It can only get worse.
Yeah. Yeah, given all of the missteps that the Bush administration has done, all the absolute mistakes that they have made from the very beginning, failing to provide for the security of the people, all the way up to now, you know, the brutal punishment in Fallujah, blah blah blah, you know, the whole list, and this long list of absolute total missteps and failures, and treating Iraq and Iraqis with the same contempt that they treated the rest of the world, which has caused the rest of the world now to shun us. I am frankly embarrassed as an American. I'm starting to agree with the Dixie chick. I forget which one it was. She was embarrassed to be from Texas. It is embarrassing to have this administration running our country. It truly is. But it goes beyond that, because it's causing, you know, these are life and death issues. We've, you know, more than 700 of our young men and women are dead. You know, some 3,000 to 4,000 are missing legs, arms, eyes. And for what? So that George Bush can enrich his oil buddies?
It also shows privatizing is not always a good solution.
It's rarely a good solution. It's rarely a good solution.
You know, privatizing interrogation was a disaster.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All Glenn, right. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. David in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just want to make a comment about the recent treatment of those prisoners. It's got everybody all riled up. You know, I am not surprised that that could happen, because being, going into the Army from the very first day when they cut off all your hair and start calling you names, they start indoctrinating you.
Yeah.
And they...
Well, they teach you to follow orders. I mean, that's the whole point of the whole thing.
More than that, Tom, because if you look and see how these guys are talking about what happened when they're interrogated, they're talking about the target and it.
Yeah.
They don't see people over there, and that's because their training drums it out of them not to see people, because you can't do that to people.
Yeah,
they have to steal you to your, to your heart, to your better sense. They have to take that away from you.
Yeah.
So they drum it into you. So I'm not surprised that, you know, when you get them in captivity, you treat them like you've been taught who they are.
Except, David, I don't disagree with you altogether. I went through basic training in the Air Force down in Lackland Air Force Base, and it wasn't quite like that. But the Marine Corps, I understand, is a whole different game. But the people who are accused of this are neither members of the Air Force, the Army, the Navy, or the Marines. They're weekend warriors. They're the National Guard. These are National Guard folks who are accused of doing this, and so I think that more than the training issue, I think that the two big issues are, number one, when you're in the military, you're taught to follow orders, and particularly in time of war, you realize that if you don't follow orders, you might die. So you have to pay attention to those orders. I forgot what my second point was. Oh, and number two, in a war situation where people are trying to kill you and you may have to kill in order to survive, there's a certain psychological disconnect that's essential for psychological survival, and that is that you have to objectify other people. You have to see them as something other than a human being with whom you can empathize, but instead as the enemy, like you said, an it. And I think that just comes with war. I don't think that you have to train people for that. I've been in war zones. I was in Uganda during the war with Idi Amin, and seeing soldiers, kids who were carrying guns, they had no training at all, and they got it that the enemy was an it. I think war just creates that. Yeah, I think that's just the
Reptilian brain kicks in, huh?
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
Well, thanks for having that singer on a minute ago. That was some good comic relief.
Yeah, wasn't that great? David, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Yep, you too. 1-866-889-8894, our number. Ralph Reed, the former executive director of the Christian Coalition and regional chairman of the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign, is urging Nevada voters to rely on Fox News Channel for news and information. Dick Cheney, by the way, has done the same thing. Isn't it interesting that 72% of Fox watchers and listeners say that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction and a nuclear program, whereas only 44% of Americans who are not regular Fox watchers or listeners believe that. So we know that people who watch Fox News, faux news, believe fantasies. And here we got Dick Cheney. What I try to do is, for example, I end up spending a lot of time watching Fox News because they're more accurate. This is from Dick Cheney. Yes, indeed, folks. It is a brave new world. This is Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
A company whose customers love nature is trying to do right by the natural world. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Patagonia is a well-known company that sells outdoor clothing, rock climbing gear, and all sorts of other equipment for nature lovers. Several years ago, the company looked at all the chemicals that were used to make its products, and it made a commitment to eliminate as many of the toxic ones as it could. Dave Olson was once the chief executive officer of Patagonia, and he led the company's transformation. Olson says Patagonia uses a lot of cotton, so he looked into the chemicals that are used to grow the crop. A cotton farmer gave Olson and his colleagues a tour of a conventional operation.
He named all the herbicides and all the pesticides and all the defoliants, and he told us the amounts, the pounds that were applied to each acre of cotton.
Olson says that was an eye-opening experience.
So we knew, for the first time really, that when we placed our order for 300,000 pounds of cotton, we were causing thousands of pounds of highly toxic herbicides and pesticides and defoliants to be applied.
Olson says Patagonia decided to switch to organic cotton and spent a few years locating enough organic farmers to fill its orders. Olson says the company also examined the dyes that are used to color its clothing. The coloring process can contaminate millions of gallons of water with toxic metals. Olson says Patagonia worked with two large chemical companies to create entirely new dyes that are based on plant materials rather than metals. Olson recently retired from Patagonia, but he says the company is still carrying on this transition to environmentally friendly products. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Boy, there's just so much. It is really remarkable. David Brock has put up this MediaMatters.org site. Documenting the lies and distortions on the Reich. And Rush Limbaugh lied about Republicans undermining the Kosovo war effort. Fox's Chavez called Kerry a communist apology and then lied about it on Fox. Federalist Alexander suggested Kerry responsible for soldier deaths. Rush Limbaugh saying liberals hate the military. Give me a break. Fox's Hannity falsely stated Kerry's record on military funding again. I mean, the headlines are pretty scary. This is what I had said the other day. One of our callers called and said, why doesn't John Kerry take a more aggressive position against the war in Iraq? And I said, because if he did, even if he thinks, you know, we should be pulling out, I mean, you just, when a war is being prosecuted, when your soldiers are in harm's way, unless it's just an extreme situation that's gone on for years and years and years, like Vietnam did by the time Gene McCarthy came along, you don't go in and say, you know, this is wrong, because then you will be accused of causing the deaths of soldiers. And it's already happening. What I predicted is already happening. In a May 1st column, the Federalist's Mark Alexander claimed that the recent spike in casualties among American soldiers in Iraq coincides with what he describes as Senator John Kerry's increased focus on Iraq, an expression of dissenting views on our mission. Now this, you know, the right-wingers are attacking Kerry, and he's been milquetoast on this thing. Yeah, Alexander says, in the years since the cessation of major hostilities, America's resolve in our war against jihadists has been under relentless assault, not so much by the jihadists themselves, but by the political ambitions of demo-presidential contenders and their left media minions. In the 15 months since the coalition's invasion of Iraq, 736 American personnel have been killed, but more than a fourth of those troops have been killed in just the past 2 months, a period coinciding with the end of the Democratic presidential primary. What, you ask, is our point? Merely this, that it is precisely the moment when John Kerry's dissenting views on our mission in Iraq became the central focus of his political campaign as broadcast around the world. Yeah, right. It's all the Democrats' fault. It was all Clinton's fault. It's now all Kerry's fault. George Bush doesn't know how to fight a war. He puts our soldiers in harm's way. He turns the entire world against us. He creates a hostile Iraq. And it's all John Kerry's fault. Welcome to the right-wing media of America. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, exposing the con in conservative.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Negotiations for a new three-year contract continue between the Writers Guild of America and the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. In 1984, when the video cassette market was in its infancy, talent guilds agreed to exclude 80% of revenues when calculating their share of profits. Now DVD sales, more than $22 billion in 2003, are projected to exceed VHS, and studios are claiming any pay increases will bankrupt the industry. Also in dispute is the amount companies pay for healthcare coverage and reality TV, the bulk of which is produced by non-union labor.
Democrats in Congress today unveil a counterproposal to George W. Bush's plan to create an immigrant guest worker program. Whereas the White House seeks to provide temporary resident status, the Democratic plan would offer permanent citizenship to any currently undocumented worker who's been in the U.S. for 5 years or more and has worked full-time for at least two of those years. In exchange, the Democrats would reduce the number of guest workers allowed into the country. Neither bill, however, is likely to clear Capitol Hill before the November election.
On May Day, 300 trade unionists in Thailand stormed the government house calling for an increase to the minimum wage, better protection for workers trying to unionize, and the removal of Thai troops from Iraq.
The Canadian province of British Columbia nearly experienced a general strike in the public sector yesterday as 100,000 workers in various government agencies prepared to stop work in support of BC hospital staff. 43,000 healthcare workers walked off the job last week when contract talks with the provincial health authority broke down. Key to the dispute were government demands for a retroactive wage reduction and more latitude for the outsourcing of hospital support staff. The BC legislature passed an emergency back-to-work law last Thursday, but the strike continued until Sunday. That prompted the larger walkout threat, which was only averted when the province backed down on the retroactive pay cut and agreed to limits on future outsourcing. Even so, hospital support staff will take a 15% wage decrease over the term of the new deal, and many are wearing black this week to mourn the mixed outcome.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study in the Journal of Urban Economics found that city dwellers living close to a National Football League franchise pay higher rent and property taxes for that privilege. On average, a resident in an NFL city pays $184 a year, or 8% more than those without a football team. And researchers found total property taxes were about $50 million a year higher.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
What is one of the most dangerous things you can do when you get seriously ill? Go to the hospital. Talk about catch-22. You're sick and you're told by your doctor to go to the hospital, but no one tells you the deadly little secret of today's hospitals. They kill. They kill because they have inadequate infection control practices. Patients going in for a particular problem often acquire infections from the hospital itself, often causing death. Lots of deaths. The Center for Disease Control reports that nearly 90,000 Americans a year die from these hospital infections. That's more than die from auto accidents and homicides combined. About 2 million patients a year catch infections from their hospitals, one of every 20 people who go in. What could be done? A huge step forward would be the simplest one, hand washing. Infections could be cut by more than half if there was an effective program for all medical personnel to wash their hands regularly, especially washing with alcohol hand rubs. Yet hospitals, apparently watching their bottom lines, don't have such a system in place, and none are required to put it in place. On the other hand, some hospitals do an excellent job of preventing infections. How are you to know the good from the bad? You can't. Believe it or not, there's no requirement that hospitals report or publicly disclose their infection rates so we patients can decide which is the best place for us. Luckily, some states are pushing mandatory disclosure laws. Unluckily, hospital lobbyists are pushing a bill in Congress that would preempt the ability of states to require this disclosure, instead setting up a voluntary federal program for reporting infection rates, and even these voluntary reports would be kept from the public. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is stupid. Consumers Union is fighting for full disclosure. Join them at StopHospitalInfections.org.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Toyota owners, roll into summer with great tire service offers at your participating Toyota dealer. And keep rolling all year long with free gas from Toyota. That's right, Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer, where you get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter the sweepstakes.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 year old with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com.
Thank you.
lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Did you see Seymour Hersh on the McNeil-Lehrer report last night? He was on McNeil-Lehrer. Apparently he was on Charlie Rose later on in the evening. I missed that one. But I saw his interview on McNeil-Lehrer. And the stories, you know, bits and pieces of these stories are leaking out. Welcome back, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live coast to coast and around the planet. Our archives are at whiterosesociety.org. You can get there by typing that in or by going to the archives link off our website. We also have some archives of older shows, topic-specific, organized by Mike Toth on our website. And whiterosesociety.org is just wrapping up a fundraising drive. They're trying to add a little bandwidth so that they can support the many liberal talk shows, the progressive talk shows that they offer archives of on their website. And our program is streamed daily, multiple times daily, actually, to literally tens of thousands of people all over the planet by radiopower.org, and which is also a listener-supported radio station. And you can just click the contribute button there at radiopower.org and thank them for the good work that they're doing. And, of course, if you're listening on a radio station, on one of our radio stations, please patronize our sponsors. It's what keeps radio going, whether it's my show or any other show. If you want to vote for a show, patronize the sponsors. That's how you do it, and let them know that you heard about the program, that you heard on, you know, that you're doing it because of the program. Anyhow, George Bush, human rights activist, George W. Bush has said, and I quote, "No president has ever done more for human rights than I have," end quote. No president. Thomas Jefferson, he didn't know anything about human rights. Franklin Roosevelt, forget it. Abe Lincoln. James Madison. Well, he wrote the Constitution, but he didn't know anything about human rights. I'd like to spend a few minutes exploring George W. Bush's human rights record with you, if I may. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, by the way, if you'd like to call in, if there's something on your mind about this. Bush's human rights record goes back to when he was governor of Texas. Keep in mind that the only nations in the world that continue to execute their civilians, or that execute juvenile offenders, there's only five nations in the world that execute juvenile offenders: China, the Congo, Iran, Pakistan, and the state of Texas in the United States. I'd like to dig into that a little bit. First, we have Billy in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, Billy, how you doing today?
I'm great. How about you?
I am great, but I'll get better. The sun has come out. It's up to 48 degrees here in the People's Republic of Vermont. The snow has gone away. Say what?
Tom, you're so lucky to be able to have weather change on you out like that out here. It's always goddamn beautiful here. It's so boring.
Yeah. Sorry about that, Billy.
That's all right. I'll get used to it. Yeah. I'll get better, as you say.
There you go. What's up?
There's so much to talk about. There's a couple of things I want to cover quickly. First of all, you know, if you're truly a democratic people, you teach people how to vote. And imagine the situation for America in Iraq if we had the Iraqis actually vote on whether we stay or go.
Yeah.
It would be the ultimate out for us.
Well, I mentioned in the last hour that you had suggested that a couple of weeks ago. Maybe your ears were burning if you weren't listening. I actually quoted you by name.
Ah.
I said, you know, Billy in Santa Cruz called a couple of weeks ago and suggested that we should have a vote and let the Iraqis decide whether or not we stay or leave. And
well,
I think it's a great idea.
We know that the right wing monitors your program. Why haven't we heard about this idea? Is it just too purely democratic?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, Sauter had been organizing elections in June of last year and elections for a lot of, you know, city level functions, mayors and things like that. And some of those elected officials, they've essentially forced us to keep. So, you know, but now the coalition and the UN and all this, I mean, they haven't even started the process of coming up with a process for registering voters, much less actually voting or coming up with who the candidates are going to be. So, you know, I think that there's a bit of an infrastructure problem here before we go any further.
You know, yeah, there's a bit of a desire problem on the part of the Bush administration to have an honest election there or anywhere else.
Yeah.
Tom, the big story that nobody seems to be talking about, and I don't get, there's two of them that aren't getting coverage. First of all, the one from last week where Nightline, the most respected news program in America, was canceled by Americans were told they couldn't see it.
Yeah, you know what I thought was very interesting was that the CEO of that, I believe it's the CEO, one of the senior officers, either the CEO or chairman of the board or something, of that corporation, Sinclair Broadcasting, had in 1998, I don't have the story right in front of me, been arrested for indecent, a lewd act because he was alleged to have picked up a prostitute and was driving around while she was doing her thing, as it were, and the police pulled him over. And,
are you allowed to say her thing anymore with the FCC?
That's about as far as I'm going to go. But she, you know, this the guy who's lecturing us on how we should be thinking.
Well, you know, exactly. But you know what? That's as good as juicy as that is. I'm just really shocked that this to me is the beginning of the end. You know, if honest news programs can't get on the air because it doesn't achieve the capitalist goals of the owners, I don't understand anymore. I don't understand why their license is still in their own hands. I just don't get how this isn't a lot bigger, if you will, than Janet's breast.
Well, it is. And the reason why, of course, and you know it, I know that you're asking rhetorical questions here, Billy, because the answer is that the same right-wing corporate thugs who are controlling many of these media outlets are also controlling the FCC at the moment. You got Michael Powell. I mean, his father was Colin Powell was on the board of directors of AOL Time Warner, one of the largest media combines in the entire world.
Hey, do you remember when Colin Powell was the most respected man in America?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Before the Bush administration brought him low and made him lie for him?
Yeah, I know. It's a real tragedy. It's a real tragedy.
One last thing before I go.
Yes, sir.
So I'd like to know how we expect the Bush administration to accomplish anything of note or of worth if, in fact, they can't even find the guy who outed the CIA agent in their own backyard.
290 days ago, Valerie Plame was outed. And actually, Joe Wilson's going to be on this show, I believe, next week. So
you know,
we will have a conversation with him about
that. They're treasonous, and I want to know why they're not being tried for treason.
Well, there actually is an investigation going on. It's out, you know, it's out of the hands of John Ashcroft. And in some ways, the fact that there's not a lot of publicity about it tells me that either there's a cover-up going on, or, and I think this is more likely, this guy is fixing to nail somebody really hard.
Now,
whether he'll be able to put up with the political pressure not to do it until after the elections is the big question.
You know, it's just a one-off mistake. It's not as if, for example, this is an administration that makes people lie for them about programs and how much they really cost. It's not like they're dishonest about everything they do, like steal elections, lie about the cost of programs, give people special deals and taxes.
Lie about why we're going to war.
Time.
Yeah, lie about weapons of mass destruction. Lie about,
no.
You know, it's a, No.
One mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
100,000 lies.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah thanks,
it's
buddy.
Tragic. It's tragic. Billy, thanks. It's always great to rant on the air with you.
Love it.
I appreciate it. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Okay, do good. Do good, my brother. Okay, on Friday, Bush expressed deep disgust over photos that appeared on the CBS News magazine 60 Minutes 2. Deep disgust. Well, first of all, that's not going to cut it in the Arab world. I can tell you right now, it is not going to cut it in the Arab world. He's got to be saying, heads are going to roll. This is intolerable. And if Cy Hirsch is right, the other shoe has not yet dropped. Apparently, there is a women's wing in that prison. Apparently, rape was a routine part of how women were softened up for interrogation. And if that is true, And that story makes it out. And Hirsch, apparently yesterday, was suggesting that that may be coming down the road in short order. Then I don't think any of our soldiers in Iraq will be safe. I mean, we may be looking down the barrel of not just an insurgency. We may be looking down the barrel of a popular uprising that where grandmothers will be carrying rifles, as was happening in South Vietnam toward the end of the war, after they had seen. I mean, people forget, 56,000 Americans died in the Vietnam War, 2 million Vietnamese died. We sprayed Agent Orange on mile after mile after mile in order to kill the canopy of the forest so that we could see targets. And in the process, we rendered their soil sterile. Nothing would grow. People died of starvation. In their anger, in their rage, grandmothers were taking up arms against us. And if we are running rape rooms again, particularly against the women of Iraq, and I don't mean that in some sexist way, but, you know, that's their culture. It's our culture, too, to some extent. I don't think that we will be able to handle the rage that will be expressed towards us. And not just in Iraq. I don't think our soldiers in Saudi Arabia will be safe. I don't think our soldiers, the few that are left, I don't think our soldiers in Kuwait will be safe. I don't think our soldiers in Qatar will be safe. I don't think our soldiers in Abu Dhabi will be safe, in the UAE. I don't think our business people who are trying to do business in Egypt will be safe. I don't think our tourists will be safe. If this is what George Bush has brought to the world, well, let's take a look at what one of the world's most brutal leaders has done in the past. Since 1973, this, by the way, my source for this, I want to acknowledge this because it's brilliantly written, well done, a commentary. This is on bushwhackedusa.com, a commentary by Eric, and I don't know if it's pronounced Bose or Boss, B-O-S-S-E, called George W. Bush's Selective Disgust. Hypocritical president claims to be troubled by the abuse of Iraqi prisoners, yet ignores, condones, or perpetuates human rights abuses in the United States and around the world. 113 people since 1973 have been released from death row on evidence of their innocence in the United States. None of them in Texas while George W. was governor. In fact, from 1992 to 2000, he personally oversaw the execution of 152 human beings. 152 people George Bush helped put to death. Let's take a look at that for just a moment. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
We could build thousands of new schools, or hire a million new teachers. We could make sure every child has insurance. Instead, under George Bush, America is alone, spending tens of billions to rebuild Iraq with no plan for success. After 3 years, when is George Bush going to start taking care of America? Shouldn't America be a top priority?
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Just got home from Illinois. Locked the front door, oh boy. Got to sit down, take a rest on the porch. Imagination sets in. Pretty soon I'm singing. Looking out my back door.
And welcome back. Okay, here we got 152 people, 152 human beings put to death by George W. Bush while he was governor of Texas. Let's just take a quick look at that number. Now, this about the same time that Jim Thompson, the governor of Illinois, stopped executions because of DNA sorts of things and these reevaluations of cases. They were finding that 10, 15, 20, 25% of their death row inmates were not only not guilty of the crime of murder, they were not guilty of any crime whatsoever. And he had to pardon them. And so he said, that's it. I'm not going to kill any more people because we might kill somebody who's innocent in Illinois. And Illinois wasn't, you know, just cranking them out like Texas. But let's look at these 152 people that George W. Bush executed. In a third of the cases, this again from this article by Eric Boss, George W. Bush's selective disgust on bushwhackedusa.com. A third of the cases, the lawyer who represented the death penalty defendant at trial or on appeal had been or was later disbarred or sanctioned. A third of the cases, they did not have appropriate legal counsel. Do you get that? A third of the cases.
This is, you know, the Sixth Amendment to the United States. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district, blah, 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 and to be informed of the nature of their guilt, to be confronted by witnesses, to have compulsory process for obtaining witness in his favor, and have the assistance of counsel for his defense. The Sixth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. We're not talking about an obscure Texas law that says that you have to have a competent lawyer. It's the Constitution! Well, that didn't seem to bother George W. One-third of the death row inmates who were presented to him for execution did not have competent counsel. Their lawyers had been disbarred or sanctioned. In 40 of the cases, in 40 of these death row cases, those attorneys presented either no evidence whatsoever at any stage during the trial, or only one single witness at the very end of the trial in the sentencing phase after guilt had already been determined by the jury. In 29 cases, the prosecution used the testimony of a psychiatrist who never examined the accused, but only answered a hypothetical question. Sir, if somebody has killed in the past, might they do it again? The psychiatrist says, well, yes, it's possible. Thank you very much, sir. Other witnesses, and this practice, by the way, has been condemned as being unethical, but it was just fine with George W. Bush. Other witnesses included one who was temporarily released from a psychiatric ward to testify. This was a witness who convicted somebody of murder. A pathologist who has admitted faking autopsies, and a judge who had been reprimanded for lying about his credentials. George W. saw nothing wrong with any of these cases. Put them to death! Stick in the needle! Off they go. 29 minutes past the hour at the Tom Hartman radio program. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Negotiations for a new 3-year contract continue between the Writers Guild of America and the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. In 1984, when the video cassette market was in its infancy, talent guilds agreed to exclude 80% of revenues when calculating their share of profits. Now DVD sales, more than $22 billion in 2003, are projected to exceed VHS, and studios are claiming any pay increases will bankrupt the industry. Also in dispute is the amount companies pay for healthcare coverage and reality TV, the bulk of which is produced by non-union labor.
Democrats in Congress today unveil a counterproposal to George W. Bush's plan to create an immigrant guest worker program. Whereas the White House seeks to provide temporary resident status, the Democratic plan would offer permanent citizenship to any currently undocumented worker who's been in the U.S. for 5 years or more and has worked full-time for at least 2 of those years. In exchange, the Democrats would reduce the number of guest workers allowed into the country. Neither bill, however, is likely to clear Capitol Hill before the November election.
On May Day, 300 trade unionists in Thailand stormed the government house, calling for an increase to the minimum wage, better protection for workers trying to unionize, and the removal of Thai troops from Iraq.
The Canadian province of British Columbia nearly experienced a general strike in the public sector yesterday as 100,000 workers in various government agencies prepared to stop work in support of BC hospital staff. 43,000 healthcare workers walked off the job last week when contract talks with the provincial health authority broke down. Key to the dispute were government demands for a retroactive wage reduction and more latitude for the outsourcing of hospital support staff. The BC legislature passed an emergency back-to-work law last Thursday, but the strike continued until Sunday. That prompted the larger walkout threat, which was only averted when the province backed down on the retroactive pay cut and agreed to limits on future outsourcing. Even so, hospital support staff will take a 15% wage decrease over the term of the new deal, and many are wearing black this week to mourn the mixed outcome.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study in the Journal of Urban Economics found that city dwellers living close to a National Football League franchise pay higher rent and property taxes for that privilege. On average, a resident in an NFL city pays $184 a year, or 8% more than those without a football team. And researchers found total property taxes were about $50 million a year higher.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
As a waitress in Beaumont, she said, I'm moving away. I'm gonna get what I want. I'm tired of these small town boys that don't move fast enough. I'm gonna find me one who wears a leather jacket and likes his living rough.
And there he is. I'm not going to go there with that. Welcome back. It's a discussion in the chat room. I'm sorry. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman talking to you here live coast to coast, border to border, all over the planet. We're talking about George W. Bush, the man who claims that no president in the history of the United States has ever done more for human rights than has he. No president has ever done more for human rights than I have. A verbatim quote from the mouth of George W. Bush, George Walker Bush, currently resident of the White House of the United States. During the controversy, this piece, George W. Bush's selective disgust by Eric Bosse, or Bosse, B-O-S-S-E, and BushwhackedUSA.com. During the controversy swirling around the 2000 election in Florida, Bush signed off on the execution of John Paul Penry. Now, who is this? John Paul Penry is a 44-year-old man who still believed in Santa Claus. Seriously. The guy had the intellect of a 6-year-old. The intellectual capacity of a 6-year-old at 44 still believed in Santa Claus. He did not know what he had done wrong. He did not understand the charges against him. Interestingly, he was prosecuted and convicted of murder because he wrote out and signed a confession, yet the man was incapable of reading or writing. When he was told he was going to be put to death, he still didn't know why or what for, but he told the press that he was going to heaven and that he would save a place for each one of us. George W. Bush looked at the plan for executing him and said, send him off.
another one to heaven. I mean, you know. As governor of Texas, Bush, quote, routinely denied last-ditch pleas for clemency on execution day by systematically hearing no evidence, seeing no evidence, and sealing him away from any tragic possibility that any evil was done at all, end quote. What he did was pretty much the way that he's gathering news now, the way he's conducting the war in Iraq, the way he put this thing together. I mean, you know, this should not be a surprise to us. He delegated the task of studying and summarizing the evidence in each case and had this is George Bush. We're not talking now about the guy with the intellect of the six-year-old. We're talking about George W. Bush as governor of Texas. He delegated the task of investigating the cases and then asked the person to whom he had delegated this task to read the summaries to him. He didn't even want to read the cases. He didn't even want to read the summary of the cases. He wanted somebody to read them to him. And who was the person who he delegated this task to? Alberto Gonzalez. Does that name sound familiar to you? He's the president's lawyer in the White House, and he's the guy that everybody says is going to be the next appointee to the Supreme Court. Gonzalez's summary is, quote, repeatedly failed to apprise the governor of crucial issues in the cases at hand, ineffective counsel, conflict of interest, mitigating evidence, even actual evidence of innocence. End quote. The Atlantic did a story about this in July, August 2003 issue, about Gonzalez's role in this, how he just kind of whitewashed these things. Well, as you know, we can just kind of cover this over. During the past 5 years, the United States has executed 13 children, 8 of them in the state of Texas. Virtually nobody else in the world will do this. And now, and this is the guy who is telling us that he's feeling disgust over torture at the Abu Ghraib prison. And yet, if you poke around the internet for just 30 seconds, looking for not, you know, blogs and weird stuff, but news reports of torture in the Texas prisons while George W. Bush was governor, you will find them, and he was unconcerned. In fact, the prevailing sentiment among Bush and the other cons was, by and large, hey, nobody said prison should be pleasant. So you get raped, so you get AIDS, so you die. You shouldn't have smoked that pot in the first place. Of course, when George W. Bush got arrested for possession of cocaine, he just had to do 30 days of community service and a community center in downtown Dallas, or Houston, rather. And later wrote about it in his autobiography as a sudden urge to philanthropy. And now we have somewhere between 9 and 11,000 Iraqi civilians dead in Iraq as we look for weapons of mass destruction that don't exist. Almost 1,000 of them just in the last week. Mass graves reappearing outside Fallujah in the soccer field. The soccer field in Fallujah is now a mass grave. People killed by soldiers under the command of George W. Bush. And we discover that torture is going on in the prisons in Fallujah. Are we surprised? Are we horrified? Well, yeah, we really hold America to a higher standard than that. And we really believe that our military is at a higher standard than that. But we didn't realize that, number one, the people running the prison wouldn't be professional soldiers, but would be weekend warriors, National Guardsmen and women, who really just signed up because they needed a little extra money on the weekends, you know, for weekend work, by and large, or because they wanted to be of service to their state and their nation if there was a national emergency, if there were floods or tornadoes. We didn't expect that, essentially untrained personnel would be in that position. And we didn't realize that for-profit corporations connected, politically connected to the Bush family, donors to the Republican Party, would be putting sadists in charge of interrogations in these prisons, and that these employees of these for-profit contracting companies would be giving orders to our ill-trained weekend warriors. And what? And now to secure the absolute confidence of the people in Iraq, George Bush says, "Okay, I got something. I know what's going to make you guys. This is going to make you absolutely confident in us. You will be so reassured that we're there for good purpose. You'll absolutely know it, that we're there to help out. When you figure out." That we're going to appoint our ambassador to the United Nations, John Negroponte, as our ambassador to Iraq. He's going to be the guy on the ground who's going to be supervising the military that we're not going to let your government, that we're going to hand so-called sovereignty over to, take charge of. He's the guy who's going to be supervising the privatization of your industries. He's the guy who's going to be running your country. And they go, who? John Negroponte? And, for example, Kevin Ovenden of the UK's Indie Media writes, "The death squads left tens of thousands of people dead in El Salvador, Honduras, and Nicaragua as they murdered to prop up pro-U.S. dictatorships under President Ronald Reagan." Well, wait a minute, that's ancient history, you say. Well, stick around. Internationally respected New York Times credits John Negroponte with carrying out the covert strategy of the Reagan administration to crush the Sandinista government in Nicaragua during his tenure as U.S. ambassador to Honduras from 1981 to 1985. Negroponte saw the growth of military aid to Honduras from $4 million to $77.4 million per year. Much of that money was funneled to the death squads in neighboring Nicaragua and El Salvador. In early 1984... two U.S. mercenaries, Thomas Posey and Dana Parker, contacted Negroponte saying they wanted to supply arms to Contra death squads in Nicaragua. Documents show that Negroponte connected the two with a contact in the Honduran military. Other documents uncovered a scheme of Negroponte and then Vice President George Bush Sr. to funnel Contra aid money through the Honduran government. Negroponte concealed murder, kidnapping, and torture by a CIA-equipped and trained Honduran military unit, Battalion 3-16. According to the Baltimore Sun, the unit, quote, used shock and suffocation devices in interrogations. Prisoners were often kept naked, and when no longer useful, killed and buried in unmarked graves, end quote, from the Baltimore Sun. The death squads in the tiny country of El Salvador murdered 40,000 people in just 1 year. This included Archbishop Oscar Romero. Remember him? Gunned down while he performed mass. Negroponte personally covered up the murder of 32 Salvadorian nuns who fled to Honduras in 1981. His friends in the death squads tortured them, then crammed them into helicopters from which they were tossed to their deaths. Everything, writes UK Indie Media's Kevin Ovenden, everything that Saddam Hussein's regime stood accused of was unleashed by Negroponte. Human rights organizations lost count of the rapes and tortures. They reported how the Contras would cut off women's breasts in Nicaragua. Negroponte's history extends all the way back to Vietnam, where he coordinated pro-U.S. death squads from 1964 to 1968. Oh, the Iraqis are going to love us. They're just going to love us. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jeff in Denver's on the line. Hey, Jeff, am I getting too cynical here?
I don't think we're all even remotely cynical enough, Tom. The hard part is trying to be positive and lead us out of this rather than for all of us just to dive down into the sewers of, you know, evil thoughts.
There you go. Well, I am finished with this rant. In fact, I just wrapped it up. But I think that you have to know what's going on before you can do something about it.
Yeah.
And we have to know that George W. Bush does not, you know, his human rights record is absolutely disgusting. And he wants to put John Negroponte in place, the guy who was the dirty warrior of Iran-Contra and of the Vietnam War. And he wants to put him in charge of Iraq. And somehow it makes perfect sense. And it gives us all the more reason why we have to be sure that this guy doesn't get reelected, that Republicans are not elected to the House of Representatives, that Republicans are not elected to the United States Senate, and the conservative Democrats are not elected. You got people like Zell Miller running around and Joe Lieberman going, yeah, this is the way to do it. Get them out of office.
Even Hillary Clinton has really defended her vote on the Iraq War.
Yeah.
We've got to go way beyond, you know, way more progressive than we're getting out of the Democratic Party. Now, I will vote for the Democratic Party right now, but as soon as the Democrats are elected, I'm going to do what I can to get, you know, better people in there.
Yeah, me too. I'm
working within the party right now. I'm going to the convention this week. I'm a delegate.
You're kidding. You were, now, a year ago when we were talking about this, you were green all the way, weren't you?
I'm doing it out of functionality.
Yeah, you know? I mean,
yeah, there's a methodology here.
There's a method to your madness. And, well, see, that's the thing. That's what I've been saying to people all along is that instead of fighting against the Democratic Party, because we're stuck with this two-party system, whether we like it or not, it's built into our Constitution. And so rather than trying to fight the Democratic Party and ending up throwing things to the Republicans, why not infiltrate it like the cons did with the Republicans?
And guess what? It's easy.
Yeah. Oh, they're looking for help.
Yeah, well, it was really easy. I mean, it's just incredibly easy, not just to get to the meetings, but most people there really, let's say the caucuses, the people who went there, most hadn't really studied the issues. Mm-hmm. It was easy to guide them. And
this is wonderful. I love it.
Yeah.
Keep going, Jeff. Keep going.
But tell
me about it. I want to know, how did you get in? How did you get into the Democratic Party? Tell me what you did.
I went to the caucus.
You just showed up?
And they said, who wants to be, and once we did our votes, yeah, I went to the caucus. Once we did our votes, they said, who wants to be a delegate? I said, I guess I will.
That's wonderful. I am so impressed.
And it was, you know, easy, but the thing is, it wasn't just that. We also got to make lots of resolutions. And so we wrote these resolutions as, you know, to present as the party platform, and our group presented the most of anybody.
That's and because you had a hand in it.
Yes, I probably wrote half of them.
See, if Greens all across America would simply do this right now, then we could take back the Democratic Party. We could use the power of the Democratic Party to make sure that the voting process is clean, get rid of these Republican-controlled voting machines, and to institute instant runoff voting all across the United States, opening up democracy, and then providing space and breathing room for something like the Green Party.
Yeah,
that's absolutely great.
The thing is, if we got to talk more at the caucus, a third of the people were for Kucinich.
Yeah.
And a lot of the other people could have been persuaded had we been able to talk a bit more.
There you go. Jeff, brilliant. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you and great to hear what you're doing. God bless you. Congratulations. That's wonderful. It's Tom Hartman, 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
A UN report lists a growing number of marine environments that are running low on oxygen. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In many places around the world, coastal ecosystems are in trouble because pollution is robbing the water of oxygen. A recent report from the United Nations provides a list of almost 150 coastal environments that now suffer severe oxygen depletion. Robert Diaz is a marine biologist at the Virginia Institute of Marine Science. He wrote a study that was the basis for the UN report. He says the scientific name for the problem is hypoxia, and it received publicity for the first time back in the 1970s. That's when scientists started to document oxygen depletion in the Gulf of Mexico every spring. Diaz says once people started to look for hypoxia, they found it all over the place.
So it's really in the 80s when we see the identification of a lot of zones that had been hypoxic. But what we see in the 90s is the identification of new zones, zones that were not hypoxic in the 80s. So unfortunately, I think there is a real trend as an increase in the number of systems that are experiencing hypoxia for the first time.
Hypoxia gets started when water is polluted with excess nutrients, such as fertilizer. The UN says hypoxia could get worse in Asia and South America as farming becomes more dependent on fertilizer. Diaz agrees that it could be a serious problem.
It's in these other countries that up until this point haven't really been large users of fertilizers that we're going to see the biggest changes. And unfortunately, there'll be the worst kind of changes for the marine environment.
The report on hypoxia was part of a yearbook published this spring by the UN Environment Program. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And they look at you like they don't speak your language. And you're living at the bottom of a well. And you've swallowed all the awful, bloody secrets that you can't tell.
And welcome back. This is sort of what's going on in Iraq here right now. And the awful bloody secrets are coming out, and boy, is it We have not just lost the Iraqi people. We have lost the entire Muslim world. We have lost the entire Third World. And you know, it wouldn't surprise maybe some would say we'd already lost the rest of the First World, you know, the rest of Western Europe and Australia. This president is, as to quote Dick Gephardt, a miserable failure. 1-866-889-8889 for our telephone number. To wrap up the day, let's hear from Roberta in New Mexico. Hey, Roberta, welcome back.
Tom, thank you. It brings me great pleasure to thank you for your excellent litany of the crimes against humanity by the son of a Bush. I am the delusions of grandeur that come with that.
Yes.
Pretension to superiority by reason of wealth. And although I disagree with you occasionally on your capitalist apologism occasionally, mm-hmm. I want to thank you so much for this well-deserved reminder that we need as American people. I really have been crying all morning. I am so horrified at the state of morality in we the people, in we the numbers. We've been indifferent so long. When I say we, I hope not to include myself because I've taken action against it. But it's no longer a country for which I would want to live. It might be a country for which I would like to die. I will never commit suicide, but I am willing to stand forth against these massive crimes.
Well, Roberta, the important thing you have to keep in mind is that the Bush administration does not represent even a majority of the American population. It doesn't even represent a significant plurality. It is a bunch of right-wing cranks who got into office by pretending to be centrists. And they we'll see in November, but America is going to outlast this. Our ideals are going to outlive this. Roberta, I'm sorry. The music means we come to the end of the show, and I just, you know, it's one of those walls we can't move. But I appreciate your calling and keep up the faith, Roberta. You're one of our most important warriors. Thanks to Louise today for producing our program. Thanks to Brad Walrod for the music. Thanks to Shelby and Ben for getting us out on the web. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to you for listening. We'll see you here tomorrow, same time, same place. Tom Hartman here with you. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking.